Welcome to the Mile 99 interview with your hosts, Jessica Harris,
Mike Turner,
and Greg Larkin.
Enjoy this episode. We'll see you on the trails.
See you out there.
See you there. And we're live.
Awesome. Thank you, Greg. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mile 99 interview. I'm one of your hosts, Jessica Harris. The Mile 99 interview is a place to hang out with like-minded folks in our trail community, share our stories, successes, failures, and deepest trail secrets. This is also the place to get the latest in local race news and find out what's going on in our community. We record live in front of a Zoom audience, one take, no breaks. And unlike the trails, what is said here is on the record. I'm joined by my co-host, Greg Larkin. Mike is currently in Arizona running Cocodono 250. We're going to get all into that. But how are you, Greg?
Doing all right. Yep. Busy week. We all seem to be fairly busy for some reason. But we did a little recording last night. We'll talk about that in a second. Yeah, just trying to get my act together training-wise. Been a little inconsistent this spring, but I got Quicksilver coming. So I guess I'm just going to have to throw down and see what happens. Just go for it.
When is Quicksilver?
Oh, let's see. Under 2 weeks. So a week from Saturday.
You'll be fine.
Oh, yeah. And I'll just go out and do like a 100-mile weekend this weekend. That should probably get me in shape.
That's just what we do. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I just was after work, did a little jog. And yesterday it was very windy here. And then today it's pretty hot, 88 degrees, no wind. But I get nosebleeds, so I had to cut my run short. It's so embarrassing. But, you know, that's when we live in this dry, windy place. But happy to be here with no nosebleed. That's nice. So our Patreon, we wanted to thank some of our newest Patreons, which are Cheryl, Michael, and Marianne. We welcome everyone to join our Patreon. $1 or $2 gets you some bonus content. More is great as well. People have sent us more on Venmo as well. And we want to make sure that we have shouted those people out. Helen and Lamont, we thank you so much for your one-time contributions. Our Venmo is at the Mile 99 interview. If anyone wants to support the show, keep the lights on around here. We appreciate you. Our shirts are still available. I think they're pretty snazzy. I think we should get into how Mike is doing. What do you think, Greg?
Yeah, go for it.
Cool. So last I checked, he is at 140 miles, which is farther than he's ever ran before. I'm getting updates live from Cocodona.com, which has live tracking, which is so awesome. And from his daughter, who's crewing him. Every picture I'm getting, he looks like the Mike Turner you see on the trails in Auburn. He looks great. If you follow us on Instagram, I'm posting, as soon as I get the updates, I post them straight to Instagram. If you guys want to follow us on there, we're very close to hitting another 100 mark. So almost to 600 followers on Instagram, which feels really good. So if you guys aren't following us, head on over there.
Perfect. Thank you. Yeah. Looking forward to seeing how the whole rest of the race plays out over the next couple of days. And so I have a little bit of community news in this area. We just wrapped up a fantastic time down at the Mammoth Bar aid station for the Canyons 100K by UTMB a couple weekends ago now. It just seems like, gosh, I can't even, time's just flying by. So we got there super early set up, 4 a.m., you know, volunteers 5 a.m. We were done by 9, 10 o'clock. It was unbelievable. And so anybody that listened or attended the live athletes panel a couple nights prior to that at the aid station would have heard us talking to Aaron Clark and Adam Peterman, both Hoka athletes. And Adam is now a golden ticket winner to the Western States of 2022. His first 100K smashed the course record, averaged an 8:30-ish pace for 100K on the Canyons course, which is just mind-blowing. So obviously he was ecstatic. We interviewed them, not live, but we will have a recording coming over the weekend. We interviewed them with like a post-race kind of thing going on last night. So look for a little mini episode coming out this weekend after this episode. So we're super happy to have that opportunity to talk to them. Just briefly on the Cocodona race, we talked about Mike, but amazingly, the leader of that race is under 10 miles to go after starting Monday at 10 o'clock local time here. probably going to finish, yeah, like in the next couple hours, possibly.
And then we do have Jamie, who is a local sweetheart on the trails. Correct. Here in Auburn. She passed the 100-mile mark earlier today, so we are definitely rooting for her too.
Yeah, Jamie Johnson, if anybody's ever been out to the aid station, you know, she's worked there for a while. And she's a great community ambassador. So we just have a lot going on right now out there in the desert. So we're looking forward to that. The winner of the race is likely going to be Joe McConaughey. He's named the String Bean. He's a multiple FKT holder on the PCT, the Appalachian Trail, the Vermont Long Trail. Well wishes to him and everyone else out there. Miwok 100K is coming up this weekend. Classic race for this area, Northern California. So can't wait to see who all does that, goes for their qualifier. At Western States. That one always attracts a great crowd, I think. And I know at least one person who I met when I was pacing with Michael Lee a few weeks back, or a month ago, maybe even now, Mount Tam. Satpal, one of his good friends, I believe is doing the trifecta of Canyons, Miwok, and Quicksilver. So I got to talk to him soon and see how that's all been going.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty amazing. And that's only in the space of like 4 weeks, you know, with like a one-time, 1 week break somewhere in there this past weekend, maybe. Auburn Aid Station, they've got the 100 miles to Auburn virtual race for June. Get yourself all motivated for Western States, and you can sign up for that.
Well, and we always talk about building community. That is such a good way. It started when the pandemic hit. We all wanted to run 100 miles for the month of June for Western States. And you get some pretty good swag, and the starting is only $35. So I think that's a really good community builder. If you're out there and looking for a place to be, there it is.
Yeah, I got to say, I mean, you know, yes, 2020 was the year of the virtual race and the whole thing, but I still find it motivating to just get back from a run and like sit down and log those miles. It helps me. It literally does. And knowing that it's kind of like, you know, I'm looking at other people and seeing where they are and all that. So definitely something to check out. So related to that, I signed up for the great virtual race across Tennessee, the 1000K race that's put on by Laz of the Barkley Marathons fame. So he's got a race. It's a benefit also for food banks in Tennessee, a lot of needy people out in the country these days. So if you got a few extra bucks and you want to just, you know, get a little extra motivation and help some people out, I think that's another great way to do it. I'm looking forward to logging some miles there as well. That is it for community news. Anything else from your side, Jessica?
I don't think so. I'm obsessively tracking Mike. So yeah. When he gets back, he's just going to be like, how many Instagram stories can you possibly post about me? But I did. I just got a text during, because I'm in the loop. He's looking good.
Good, good. All right. Well, excellent. Well, let's move on to tonight's guest. Our guest tonight is
Manoop Shirvanian,
and we're pleased that he can join us. I think a lot of our local audience is going to be familiar with Manoop. I mean, he's out there. I was checking out his ultra sign up this week. I mean, you've had like over 60 races, been out there for a good number of years now. We'll talk about that. And you're just moving up into the next age bracket too, like the 60 to 69. So we'll want to talk to you about longevity and just, you know, kind of as we all get, you know, into different transitions in our life, how things change and, you know, how adjustments are made and that sort of thing. You work at the Auburn Recreation District, so a lot going on right in the Auburn area. We've been talking to Auburn people a lot, obviously, over the last couple of years. It's always great just to get everyone's perspective. It's just such a great trail running area and the community around it. And so I'd love to get some, like, you know, sort of insights from you coming from like the rec district side of things as well. We'll talk about that. I understand from your pre-interview questionnaire, you've got a pretty interesting origin story. And so welcome to the show. We'll want to dig into all that. How are you doing, Manoop?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. It's great to be with you guys.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate you taking the time. One of the things we love to do is sort of find out, you know, where you got your start. We know just talking through email that you were born in Iran. So can you tell us a little bit about that and sort of what it was like? I mean, people, you know, obviously Iran was a big in the news many years ago, a few decades back. And so can you just kind of like give us an overview of what it was like back then growing up?
Be happy to. So yeah, I was born in Iran and moved to United States in 1978 and landed in Palo Alto. So what was it like in Iran, growing up in Iran? So we were born and raised close to the Caspian Sea. And you know, Caspian Sea was about, you know, 30 miles away from our home. And we often frequently spend a lot of time at the water side, you know, in the summertime, you know, playing in the water. And Caspian Sea is not far away from Russian border. So we were on that side of the country. And it was great. It was fun. It was very different than the rest of the country. It was very westernized, you know, a lot of villas and a lot of beach communities. So it was fun. I am the oldest of four in my family. My younger brother, who's a year younger than I am, he is here in the United States. And then I have two siblings in Iran, a younger sister and a younger brother as well. And my mom is still alive. She's in Iran, and my dad is, you know, he has passed away. So, as a child, you know, it was completely a different lifestyle. You know, we played out in the street on our bikes, and, you know, I frequently walked or took the bus to school, and, you know, it was far away from home. School was, you know, not close, you know, especially high school. It was different, you know, it was different lifestyle. And then, of course, coming to United States, you know, it was an adjustment as well. But, you know, I did not fluently speak English. You know, we did take English courses in Iran, and I knew grammar well, but I couldn't carry on a conversation. So we went to high school, Gunn High School in Palo Alto. And then I graduated Gunn High School in 80, and then immediately went to college for about 2.5 years, studied business administration and accounting. But unfortunately, I didn't finish because money ran out. And that's when, you know, my parents were sending money to us. And as a foreign student, you know, paying for tuition for school was a lot more expensive than it is now. Mm. So that, you know, that kind of stopped the school process, and life moved on. And having some education in business admin and background in finance, I was able to land a job and build, you know, life from there on, and got married in 1988. And we will be celebrating, I think, 33 or 34 years here in July.
And, all right.
Yeah. So, yeah, everything is good.
Yeah. Congrats. That's great. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, back, you know, early on, I mean, you talked about running around, you know, playing and that sort of thing. Like, was it was the whole family kind of active? Did you do any organized sports or anything along those lines?
Yeah. So, you know, the most popular sport in Iran is soccer. That's what it is on that side of the world. And I didn't like soccer. I was not a soccer player. I enjoyed playing tennis very much. In our town, there was one tennis court, only one tennis court. And it was in a club. It was a private club. So I would ride my bike and go there and play tennis. And that was to the extent, you know, playing tennis. There were not too many tennis players as well. I always played tennis with someone who was a lot older than I was. So and I learned and I enjoyed it. And I, you know, that was the main sport when I was growing up. I tried basketball. Yeah, you know, it just didn't work. Running, that was never to be found on the pages of sports in Iran. You know, But cycling, you know, we were always, you know, using, you know, just going around cycling and just having fun with bicycle.
Yeah. I mean, that does strike me sometimes when, you know, there may be countries that just have different focus on different sports. And I mean, maybe in the US, you know, we have a lot of people from all over the world. So we have this huge variety of things that people are into. And you might not even think, like, if you go to a different country, it could just be like a national sport. Everybody's just super passionate about that, and everything else is kind of just sort of not really that popular. So, like, if you just went out for a run as a kid, like, would people even wonder what you were doing? You know,
I don't think it was an option. You know, so you didn't run on the streets like we do around the blocks. It wasn't one of those things. I don't remember. I'm sure nowadays things are different, but. I don't remember seeing people running, you know, so it was exercise was either, you know, soccer or going to the gym, clubs, private clubs. And then, like I said, you know, the club that I, you know, belonged to, they had a big swimming pool, diving board, and, you know, playing tennis and things like that. So, yeah, anybody running. And I.
So you kind of discovered, you know, running later in life, it sounds like. And I heard that, you know, part of the reason for that might have been you may have liked to imbibe a little bit on certain beverages. I think you might have an interesting story there about how you got your start into running.
Yeah, yeah. And I always tell, you know, it's a fun story and I enjoy, you know, sharing it. So, you know, I like good beer and I really enjoy it. So back in the Bay Area, in Mountain View, where we resided, there was a microbrewery not too far away and it called Titans. So microbreweries back in late 80s and early 90s were rare to find. And there were only two or three of them that I remember, you know, one in San Francisco, San Jose, and the one in Mountain View, lucky for me, it was close. So yeah, so I discovered good beer and, you know, carried on and noticed that, you know, size of my pants were getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So I was wearing suits those days and suits were not cheap to buy every time. So, yeah. So I said, look, if I'm going to have to do something, yeah. So, and I didn't want to give up drinking because I was not addicted to it, but it was fun. You know, I enjoyed it very much. And to this date, I do. And it just said, all right, I got to do something as I'm aging. And I was mid-30s at that time. Said, okay, well, you know what? I'm going to pick up running. So, and from where we lived, Shoreline Park, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with it. It had different access points to Mountain View area, to homes in different blocks. So one was right around the corner from our house. And one day I said, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and go for a jog, see where it goes. And yeah, shoes, whatever I had, I think it was probably tennis shoes at the time. So I put them on and went on the block, went for a little run. And then as, you know, not too far away, you know, I went through school and then all of a sudden there is this overpass that goes over an expressway. And I stopped and I'm looking at this overpass and the climb right in the middle really is not much, you know, it's just really easy. But to me, it looked like, you know, K2, you know, I didn't want to approach it. So, and I stopped and I said, you know, I turned around and I said, okay, well, you know what, I'll tackle that another day. So I came back and, you know, I tried it another time and, you know, it just, you know, I couldn't go up. I couldn't run it up straight. It was all mental at the time, of course. Mm-hmm. And that was probably the third time I was trying it. So, you know, I went back and forth and then a couple of times I zigzagged and went backwards, you know, so I made it. Finally, one day I made it over that, you know, peak of that expressway bridge. And then, you know, it started from there on. Then I knew I could do it. So I built up more confidence and built up more distance and went on. And it was all on paved bike path. And it was beautiful, nice area. And that's how it got started.
Was there any ever thought to going back to tennis or something else? Or how did you just like suddenly decide on
running? Yeah, so tennis, I continued to play tennis with friends. You know, I played tennis into mid or late 30s. But, you know, and then we had kids, of course, and, you know, like life moves on. And, you know, they occupy a lot of time, as you guys know. And so, you know, tennis kind of got pushed aside. And then I found, you know, easier time to do a different exercise. And I did cycle at the time, you know, that bike path was right around the corner. But I didn't feel enough, you know, exercise like I would get from running to, you know, to accomplish what I wanted to do, to lose some weight. And eventually it worked, you know, as I built up confidence and strength. And I think, you know, I remember, I think that I didn't have a watch to measure how far I was going. So I would, you know, if I went so far out, I would go back home. Next day, I would take my bike because, you know, I had a little device that would measure. So I would go, oh, wow, I did run 4 miles back and forth. That's pretty cool, you know. So then just went on that way.
Wow, you were actually doubling your workout and doing cross training just so you could measure the distance that you would run.
And I had no idea it was cross training. I was just trying
to right. It's just, you know, it was necessity, right? I mean, it wasn't like you planned it or anything. So that's great. Oh, that's excellent. Yeah. So after that, I mean, what was the progression? I mean, did you stick with that for a couple of years just kind of on your own, or how did you move into sort of the next phase?
So I did. I stayed with running, you know, until 2004 when we moved up this way to Grass Valley. I live in Grass Valley. And so we moved this way. And then later on, I would run around our neighborhood. You know, there are some hills where we live and it's all paved road. And, you know, again, it was just, you know, I was getting used to my neighborhood to also to be able to get some exercise. And later on, I got a job at Auburn Recreation District in 2005. I was fortunate enough that, you know, I was offered a job, and definitely I took it. So, and then I quickly discovered, you know, getting to know the public. You know, I got to know a lot of people would come through for permit process, and, you know, I was involved with that part of it. And, you know, I got to know some of these race organizers, you know, some well-known Auburn people like Brad Kearns, you know, some people like him. And, you know, I would ask him, I said, hey, Brad, how do I get to this trail? Oh, go this way, go that way. You'll be right there. Oh, okay, that's easier said than done, you know. So one day I decided, okay, well, I'm going to follow his direction and go from my office, which is at the recreation park, to go to Railhead and take that underpass and make my way, you know, into the canyon. Well, long story short, I got lost. I had no idea on the way. Yeah, seriously, that's a very confusing
yeah.
not to get
oh,
lost.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. Easy. Anyway, so I did. I got lost, and I have no idea to this day where I was. And I finally saw somebody. I said, okay, where is Railhead? That's all I remember. Okay, the closest part is Railhead. And, you know, this nice guy says, okay, follow me. You know, he took me back to Railhead. Then I found my way back to the park and, you know, then discovered the trails at that time. And then, and again, Brad used to put races on. And I think my first race was, my first actual race was a 5K. It was in 2009. And I was 40 some odd years old. I have it written down here, but mid 40s. And I'd never done a race. I didn't know what it was about putting a bib on and all that stuff. And so I showed up, you know, I fought in, just paid attention to a whole bunch of people, what they were doing. And I acted like I knew what I was doing. So I get ready, I go out for a race, and it was a great day. I to this day, I remember it very well. Anyway, so got done, came back, and I noticed people were hanging around, and I didn't know anybody. So I just wrapped up and, you know, left. So come Monday or Tuesday, Brad comes around with this little, you know, award that you placed second in your age category. I said, oh, that was good. You know, I had no idea. So that kind of, that was that. And he did. He had a lot of advice, and, you know, he helped me a lot to, you know, guide me to, you know, start running as well, find the trails. And I did. And later on, and I discovered Fleet Feet of Sacramento, the Blood, Sweat, Beer Trail run. And so that, you know, I started that. And actually, I've run every one of those races to this day. So, yeah, that was
really,
yeah, yeah. I used to nice. Train all year long to run a 10-mile race. So that was, those were the easy days.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, yeah, I think I, when I was looking at your ultra sign up, I did notice, yeah, you had a whole series of those like really early on, 2009, yeah. 10, 11, 12, all that. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, those are, I mean, that was my way to learn about all those wonderful trails that are in our backyard. And that's how I got introduced to trail running. And then I also, you know, talking about, you know, their races, you know, coming up this Saturday, I am running Dirty Secret Trail, you know, up in Cool. So after 2 years, it is coming back. So that's a fun race.
Well, and I'm just really excited because you keep bringing up this theme, which we are so passionate about here on the Mile 99 interview, and that's community. Mm-hmm. Like, someone came and found you for your award. You just watched the other people around you. Someone found you on the trail, let you follow them. It really speaks to the running community, whether it be on road or trail. We're very like-minded humans, and I love that. From the Bay Area all the way to here, you've had people kind of bringing you in and making you yep. do more. So, love that.
Yeah, I gotta say, I mean, that's sort of makes me recall some of the early times that I went on trail runs too. And you kind of show up, you don't really know what to wear, you don't know if you got the right shoes or how you're carrying any food or water, and you see all of these people, and you're, you know, naturally most of us would be intimidated a little bit, but you look around. And people are so welcoming, and they're super friendly. And it sounds like you had a similar experience where, you know, they're reaching out to you, and they want to add more people to the community. And so they make that effort. That's what we love about it.
It is. It's a great community. You know, one of the reasons that I started ultra running, you know, Way Too Cool was the first one. A good friend of mine, you know, he's he's the one who introduced me to ultra running. And, you know, we started running these short distance runs, you know, like 10 milers or 15 milers. And he kept pushing me, oh, you can do it, you can do it, you can do it. So last minute, he made me sign up for Way Too Cool. And that was my first ultra. And that was, I think it was 2015. of course, his name is Gary Carpenter. And he doesn't run anymore. He's a cyclist. He's a local Auburn guy. Oh, yeah. He's the one. And he was an ultra runner already, right? So for me to look, I really looked up at him. And he had great advice. And, oh, we had a great time. And I never forget on one of our training runs. Now everybody's going to laugh at this thing. And, you know, I told him, I said, hey, you know, it can't be that hard. Coming from Tahoe to Auburn is all downhill, you know, that Western State still, you know. it has to be doable, right? So, and, you know, we carried on. I had not even done a 50 mile at the time. And I'm talking about somebody, oh, how easy it is to run, you know, Western States. But yeah.
Everyone forgets about that small dip down to the canyon and that small climb out.
A few of them, right?
Just a few. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. So, I mean, would you consider him then to be kind of a mentor? Like both he and Brad, I mean, they're mentors to you.
Well, Gary definitely was. Gary was, and he really encouraged me. He paced me on my first RDL, or no, actually he crewed me on first RDL. And just knowing somebody like Gary, who he also paced people on Western States as well too. So he was familiar with the running community. So yeah, he had great advice, and you know, my wife and I always talk about Gary, and he goes, you know, it's all Gary's fault causing all these problems for you. I said, yeah, it's a good problem. You know, the ultra run.
60 some races later, something along those lines. Yeah, no, that's awesome. Yeah. And I mean, your first Way to Cool, you finished in like just a couple minutes over 6 hours, from what I saw there. Yeah. So, I mean, that's an impressive time for your first ultra.
And,
for sure.
You know, like I said, being a newbie and not knowing what, you know, how things are. So as many of you are familiar with Way Too Cool, that first, you know, mile is all on that kind of country or paved road. And so I, not even half a mile into the run, I fell and, you know, I cut all of my three fingers, they were all bleeding. And then I'm looking at it and I said, okay, I'm not going to stop. I prepared for this race. I'm going to go. So as I was on the trail, you know, there were some people looking, you know, and one of them was a doctor. He was pretty cool. He goes, hey, you know, make sure you don't take any aspirin, ibuprofen, any blood thinner, because you're bleeding pretty good. I said, I know, I'll stop at the first station and get it cleaned up and wrapped up. And every creek crossing, I washed it. But, you know, it's a memory. It's a nice little scar to have to remind me.
Well, and you, the picture that we posted, you're smiling like, look what I did. I did it, Mom. I fell on the trail. But yeah, that first, you know, and I think they've gotten better as the years have gone by for Way Too Cool of spreading out. Mm-hmm. So people aren't getting, you know, kind of trampled and whatnot. But yeah, in 2015, mad dash to get on that trail. And it's a little bit down, I think. Like you go down just a little bit. So now we know. We posted that picture. Now we know. 2015, Way Too Cool. And you were bleeding from the start, and you finished it.
Yeah, that was a good one. That, you know, and then I went back, with Gary again. We went back in the same area. I said, Gary, I want to find out what it was that I tripped on, right? So it was just simply, there was nothing. There was nothing to trip on. I just, you know, whatever happened, right? So, and I did find the spot and I took my camera on my phone. I said, here, let me take a picture of this area for whatever reason, right? There goes the phone. The phone dropped right there and cracked the wing, you know, the screen too. I said, okay, there's something haunted about this area. From here on, I'm going to go to the other side. Yeah, so, yeah.
A bit of a Bermuda Triangle there.
Exactly. That's a good
one. Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, from there, you pretty much ramped it up like pretty quickly over the next couple of years. You had Flute, our Folsom Lake Ultra Trail in 2017. If anyone isn't familiar with that, fantastic race that circumnavigates Folsom Lake. And we're talking 110 kilometers, something like that, mixture of road and trail, I think. And then RDL, that your first RDL 2017?
2017, yes.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a good ramp, a couple of years. So love to hear more about that after Jessica has a question, I guess.
And how old were you for your first 100 miler?
56.
56? So, I think that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool because we're talking about 5Ks in 2009 to 100 milers not that far after. I think that's just such a cool timeline. And so, I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah. So, you know what? I really give credit to our ultra runner community. Okay. I mean, we have so many people that, you know, they try to help you understand how it works. And, you know, you're out there running with them, even on the short races, long races, you know, you just learn so much from everyone. And then, you know, of course, Greg, you talked about the Flute run, the run Folsom Lake Trail. And, you know, events like that you run around your backyard, you see all these training grounds. And, you know, and these are the places I'd never seen before, right? And I heard about it. So you go out there and see it, and then I get all energized to go back, you know, on my own or with different races to go see it. So, you know, it was a combination of wanting to be outside and also wanting to accomplish a longer distance running that, you know, that made me move toward RDL. And RDL actually seriously wasn't even anywhere on my radar until like October. Not really October, probably like maybe August or September. I said, I'm going to try to do these. And I never forget one day I was running on Corey Trail, and this guy is wearing his Western State shorts. You know, he's got all of his, you know, things that I have no idea who he is. And I do remember him, but I don't remember his name. And, you know, I told him I'm running, you know, RDL. And he goes, yeah, that's a different race, but, you know, it's 100 miler. So just be prepared. A lot of things can happen on that day. That always stayed with me. I said, well, I wonder what he meant by that. You know, always, you know, a lot of things can happen. And boy, can things happen. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so when you signed up for RDL, was it your intention to qualify for Western States or just to run a 100 miler?
No, I wanted to do that as well. So I did. But I actually, you know, just combination of both. I wanted to try Western States as well. And then also just being able to run 100 miles. I mean, it's just, you guys know when we talk to people, oh, I ran 100 miles. Oh, I don't even drive 100 miles, people reply, you know? So it's a different experience. You won't know it until you do it, you know? And I got to share this with you guys. You know, I work for Auburn Recreation District, as Greg mentioned. So Gordy Ainsley, you know, the pioneer of this, you know, ultra running, serves on our board. And I don't work for him, but we're all such a great community. You know, we go to board meetings and he's there. So I remember back in the early days, you know, he would come in with all these shirts, you know, 15 miler or 100 miler. And I'm looking at him, and those are the days that I could only run 5 miles maybe, right? And I'm sitting there and I'm always thinking, how can a human being run 100 miles or 50 miles? That's just not possible. But then there he is, he did it. You know, obviously it's doable, right? So that always, you know, just puzzled me, and I wanted to know how that can be done, and yeah, did it.
Yeah, I mean, you eventually figure it out. Similar with me, when I first moved to Auburn and I heard people talking about going out on easy 20 mile runs, I'm thinking, what? How is that possible? You know, I only ran 5Ks maybe at the time, and similar thing, you just kind of gradually move up.
And there's so many different ways to do it. I mean, you can pull a Gordy and run with a loaf of bread and some orange juice in your hand, or you can, you know, there's just many ways to do it. Yeah. So I love that.
It's a great experience. And I always, and I keep repeating it, you know, our trails, our backyard right here, people come from all over the place to train here. And, you know, if you look at all of my races, every one of them are local races. I don't go outside of the area to run. And I can't get enough of here to give me a reason to go outside, you know, to, you know, I'm sure there are great, challenging and fun courses outside. One of these days I might explore them, but for the time being, I just, you know, I can't get enough of what we have out here.
That's, I always find it interesting running around Auburn and especially on Western States and other trails. I mean, just kind of imagining all the feet that have passed through and all the racers and all the just athletes from all walks of life. It's just kind of imagining you as part of that whole super community or so. Right. It's just kind of cool, you know. Yeah. It always motivates me, like, yeah, going up training hill or doing something else like that. So you qualified at RDL 2017 for 2018's Western States, which you got into. Was that now through the normal lottery process?
No, I was able to get through the admin.
Okay. All right. Excellent. So, I mean, you got that opportunity right away, 2018. Yeah, what was the mindset there? I mean, just was it a lot more nerves, or did you just sort of think, okay, like, hey, I did RDL, now I'm going to do Western States, or was it just hard to deal with the hype at all or any of that?
You know, it was definitely a different feel. You know, the RDL, RDL was scary to get in there to try to run 100 miles. But then after you get that done, everybody tells you Western States is completely a different animal. And it is true. It really is true. And like that first person told me that, you know, a lot of things can go wrong, you know, during 100 mile. And it is true. So, and I really got, I wasn't nervous while I was training for Western States. I got to know a lot of people, you know, I made great friends, you know, who showed me the trails, and, you know, we were out there for hours and hours, you know, Sarah, Melissa, and I know I'm going to miss a bunch of names, but, you know, there are so many, Dan himself, you know, I don't know how many times we ran together, but great experience to be around those people and get their feel. But if they have done Western States or they have any idea to share with you, you just take everything in. You take everything they tell you in and then process it. And I'm one of those people that, you know, process it the way I want to make it work for me. I know a lot of people tell you that you got to be out there, run 70 miles a week and go out there on the weekend, do that 50 miler. I never did that. I just never, you know, we did run long days, but I would, you know, I always took a day off or take, you know, 2-3 days off in between those long runs to let my body heal. So, you know, throughout that training, you get to run Western States and you don't want a failure. I mean, you just have to get it done. So I think that is part of the stress that you put on yourself. And of course, training has a lot to do with it. But you just, you know, it's different. It really is different to go through that training. And I admire those people who really stick with that schedule that they have, and they go do that 70 mile a week, or, you know, do that 50 miler on the weekend, and they come out on the other side and they have a great race day. It is wonderful. And I was too afraid to do things like that, to get hurt, not to be able to show up on the race day, and not to do what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Well, that's a good transition. I got a couple other questions too about a little unnotable picture of yours. We'll get to that in a second. But since you've just mentioned that, you know, I mean, I'm in the same boat. Like, I'm in my mid-50s. You're now into the 60 age group. I'm noticing obviously huge changes in my body as I've aged and, you know, coming off of many, many years of endurance sports and all that. And I like to think, oh, you know, I'm still as resilient as I was when I was 25 or 30, but it's just not the case. And I think, as you mentioned, like, just taking those rest days and letting your body rebuild, even for younger people now, I'm hearing more and more from coaches and other types of professionals that this is really essential. And if you don't, like, yeah, you might be fine for a while, but you're sort of heading down a path that might not let you have the longevity. So have you thought a lot about your longevity in the sport and kind of how far you want to take it? I mean, is this like a lifetime thing for you? And how are you going to manage it as you go in 60s, possibly 70s and beyond?
I don't know if I'm going to be running all the way into 70s. I have to think about that a little bit more, but definitely.
I didn't want to put you on the spot or anything. No.
But I do yoga, not to change the subject. I have religiously done yoga in the past, probably over 10 years. And I do believe that that 3 hours of yoga per week, does make a difference. It does prevent quite a bit of injuries that I have heard from other runners that they encounter. So I'm going to stick with that yoga for as long as I can. And I with my other forms of exercise that I do as well. But definitely yoga is the first thing on my list that I give credit to for trying to stay injury free and also keep going, keep moving.
That's great. Yeah, that's been a huge tool for me. It kind of dropped off for the last couple of years, but I've just recently kind of gotten back into it, and I can already tell that, yeah, it's essential for me personally. I think I've talked to other runners who are kind of, it may not work for them. They may do other things, but if you find something that works for you, yeah, definitely a good thing to stick with it. Do you do any strength workout or anything? I mean, as we age too, I've read a lot about just muscle loss in general and just trying to keep your muscle mass there. Is that something you've looked at?
So I do have a small morning routine. I do sit-ups and push-ups and planks. And then, sometimes when I get into the gym early enough to do yoga, I use, some of the machines, but that not as much as I should. But I think mostly is yoga and then doing my morning routine exercises that has helped me to just do what I'm doing right now.
That's great. Yeah, it's good just to have that on top of everything else, because sport is hard.
It is.
I don't think anyone's going to deny it. It puts a lot of stress on your body. So I'm doing all the things, I got the supplements and the whole deal. So it's just whatever works for you is great. So let's talk a little bit about some of those darker moments. Maybe we had a little fun on our Instagram this week. There's sort of semi-iconic picture of you. I think Jess is going to share this one right now. And so we asked our viewership to caption this beauty right here. I believe you're at No Hands Bridge. You look like you may not know exactly what's going on. Can you give us a little backstory there?
Yeah. So on that day, that was Western States, of course. That was my wife, trying to tell me, you need to go this way. This is the way you go. I said, all right. And Aaron, my pacer, he was ahead of me with, I told Aaron, just get me some Red Bull so I can make it out of here, earlier during the race, it was between Cal 2 and Ford's Bar, which is about mile 70 of Western States. My first pacer, we got to the aid station and I told him, hey, let's change the, batteries in the headlights. And I just want to prepare. And this is where I'm going to start drinking Coke, to just try to wake up. And we're going to run through and, just make it, make it happen from here on. I did good all the way to here. This was my plan to move forward. Well, as we sat down, quickly changed the batteries, I got up to leave. His headlamp was not working. And I said, hey, Jared, you stay here. Take care of that thing. Catch up with me. So as I'm leaving the aid station, there's signs every time you exit an aid station. I looked at the sign, 70 miles, you're delusional, or I was, I had no idea, I can't comprehend things. But the first thing I saw that I had another 4 miles in an hour and a half to go, right? That's how I took it. And, it's the stress of the race and you don't want to fail. So I started moving, and as soon as I saw that sign, I said, oh man, I know where I am. Quartz Hill is ahead. How in the heck am I going to run up Quartz Hill? So anyway, I put everything on the line, everything that I had saved throughout the day to put, for later on to, finish a strong race. I put everything right there to make sure I don't get pulled out at the next aid station. So I couldn't run, Quartz Hill going up. I was doing a real fast paced, climb going up. Finally, my pacer caught up with me And I looked at him and said, well, what's wrong with all these people? They're all going to drop off at the next aid station. Well, anyway, so miscommunication, we get there and I'm, you know, as I'm coming to Ford's bar, I'm running down and I'm looking at my watch. I have like 3 minutes to go through. I said, hey, you know, you get me the water and electrolytes. I'm going to go through. Just come and find me. So as I'm going down, one of the aid station workers, he comes up. He goes, hey, let me fill up your water bottle. I said, no. I'm going to go. I got to get out of here. So back and forth, I tripped and I fell right up there. And I fell on the side of the canyon, not so much on the wall of the canyon, on the other side. So I grabbed something and they grabbed me. They pulled me up and, you know, nothing serious happened. And the guy goes, calm down. There is no cutoffs here. Just relax. I said, seriously, I sat down. I passed out, right? And next thing I know, you know, somebody's pouring water over me. That was my pacer. So get up. We got to go. So regrouped and went across. And then on the other side, Aaron, you know, was pacing me. So made it all the way just right before Corey crossing, but mile 91, 92, crossing 49. And I had another fall there. And I fell on the left side of my head, which I immediately knew after I got up, things were not normal. But I was aware. I knew where I was. And, you know, Aaron was there. There were people around me. So got up. And before crossing 49, there is that water trough for the horses there. So I just dipped my head in there a couple of times, cooled down, and went to the other side of 49. And I didn't send you guys that picture because that's not a good picture. So
Aaron, let's just be clear real quick, that water trough, if anyone's seen it.
It's not the cleanest one.
You got to be desperate.
Yeah, I had to do something. And it was a hot day. Anyway, so make it back all the way, you know, and I was determined that I was going to run the roller coaster all the way down. You know, that was my plan. So, and I did. I ran it all the way down, made it, you know, through to No Hands Bridge. That's where my wife was, you know, cooling me down. And then coming up on Roby, that was the hard, you know, halfway, you know, actually, Aaron, my pacer, you know, a couple of days ago, we were running. He goes, this was the spot that I really thought you were going to drop off. Because you stopped right here, you weren't going to move. But I did, you know, I pushed through and made it to the finish. And later on, I found out that I had a concussion.
Oh my gosh. Well, despite the seriousness of all your falls, I'm going to read some of the comments that people commented because we asked people to caption the picture. So Dan Barger said, is this the finish line? I made it, right? Dave Hill or Dave Hope said, did I tell you this is my last 100-mile race? I swear it, never again. And then Robert Johnson said, I think that alligator you just wrestled is dead. Some other people remember your finish and said, pure grit, epic golden hour finish.
Yeah, that was a good one. I wasn't happy after the race got done. I really was not. And, you know, for many weeks, I really was hoping to have something like RDL, you know, good performance, 26, 27 hours. And I don't want to use the word depressed, but I was not the happiest person of finishing at that time either. But then later on, you realize what you accomplished and under the circumstances, what happened, you know, it was not an easy one.
And I would like to normalize that part of your post Western States. As we are getting close to Western States, a lot of people and guests on our show talk about that kind of post Western States depression or mental fatigue and really finding it hard to move on from, you know, the pressure and everything and the performance of that day. So I'm really glad to announce, obviously everyone knows, but you are running Western States again, ramping up for another one. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your training so far?
Yeah. So training has been great. You know, I've been working on different races, you know, again, did the same planning as I did the first time around and do all the local races. So I started, you know, with RDL as the qualifier and then, you know, formidable, way too cool, AR50, which I did not finish. And then I thought I would give myself a good punishment and I signed up for, Canyons 100K. And I finished that one. That was a great and strong training, and I really feel very happy with that. You know, finished it in 18 and a half hours and felt very good after the finish. So very strong. And then, yeah, Monday hit yoga, Tuesday went for a short run. And, you know, yesterday did the same thing for, you know, short run. And this weekend back to training and get ready, you know, to go back to the training program. So I am very excited that, you know, I can run it one more time. And but definitely this time I'm a lot, you know, I'm a lot more confident that I'm not going to get as excited as I did before. And you know, and I know the course a lot, you know, since the last race, I did a lot of hiking, working on a project, you know, for Western States, on Western States Trail. And so I, you know, I'm recording things and, you know, with another friend, we're trying to, anyway, I'll talk about that project later. But anyway, so I became familiar with quite a bit of the trail, you know, the area. So I think it should be a lot more comfortable for me as I run through the course this time around. And, you know, talking about, you know, you mentioned something about depression. I really, you know, I didn't withdraw from running after I did last Western State. I actually, for all of us local here, we know of Pioneer Spirit in the heat of the summer. So that year, right after Western States, 6 weeks later, I ran Pioneer Spirit, but I pulled out at mile 55. So that's when everything was going black and white. And I thought it had something to do with the concussion and all that stuff. So I pulled out at Granite Bay. But so I was ready to go, you know, right after Western States. And I did later on finish Overlook 50 as well. So, you know, yeah.
Yeah, just jump right back in sometimes. Yeah, you have to do it. Yeah. Well, we're about to finish, but I just want to take a couple minutes on a different topic real quick, and that is your involvement with the Canyon Keepers, which is a organization that is very much involved in working with, I think, the state parks and just keeping the Auburn State Rec area and the canyons around in good shape. And can you just briefly tell us a little about that organization and what you do there and what their
sure.
mission is?
Love to. Yeah, love to. So Canyon Keepers is a volunteer support group for Auburn State Recreation Area. So it was established about 20 years ago. And I got involved with them, but, you know, around close to 10 years ago. And what we do, we educate the public. You know, most of you guys who run around the confluence in Cool, and, you know, sometimes you see a table set up right there in the area. And, you know, we attend those tables to try to educate people how to be safe, water safety. You know, if they're taking a bottle with them, we just bring it to their attention. We're not an enforcing agent. We're just trying to educate them to be safe. And we have done, you know, a few times here and there myself, you know, on staying, you know, guarding, not so much guarding, but monitoring the No Hands Bridge that people try to come out, you know, go on the rail and try to jump. And, you know, just for the fun of it, right? And then we try to prevent things like that. And also, you know, keep the area safe and clean. Fire safety, barbecue, you know, you get a lot of visitors from out of the area that they come in and they're hauling all these big coolers, and you've seen them on the trails and you wonder how long they're going away for. You know, is it a 1 day trip or many days? You know, how far are they going? So we try to help the state rangers, the park workers with those things, because they are definitely overwhelmed with the number of visitors that they have to the park nowadays, especially after the pandemic. So, yeah, so that's one of the things we do. And then prior to that, we were hoping to open the Corey, there's a mine on Corey Trail, Harbor Cave, that you guys know about it. That was one of our projects that we were training docents to open the cave to the public so people can go in and see the cave. But that, you know, it got a little bit complicated, so that's on hold for now. But we work on different projects. You know, you will see signs. Information signs, you know, like right there on the quarry, you will see signs explaining what was there, how it got there. Those are all part of Canyon Keepers volunteering that we do.
That's an awesome program. I had no idea. I mean, I've seen the tables, and I had no idea that it was completely a volunteer-based thing. So that's really great.
Yeah, and I think we'll include a link to that in the show notes for sure. I know personally, I have definitely partaken of the water stop on many a hot day when I did not plan well at the bottom of the confluence. So that alone is worth it. And they always have flyers, additional information, trash bags. We were just down there this past weekend. They were out there at no hands. And to your point, just kind of really trying to educate people on fire safety, especially in the canyon. So important in the summertime. And then swift water issues with the cold runoff. That's always a really tough thing in the springtime. So we really appreciate you telling us about that and everything that you've been involved with there. So thank you.
It's fun. It's fun. And then it's also great that you see all these runners that you know, when you're sitting at the table and you're, hey, I'm having a break here. You guys go run.
All right.
And you're everywhere, which is just great. At every race, I mean, you're just everywhere. You are a major part of our community here, a friendly face, inspiring story for a lot of people. We've already been with you for an hour here, so we're going to wrap things up. But before we do, I have a couple rapid fire. Actually, before that, I have a question from our Zoom chat. Jack Meyer, he says, he's so silly. I guess you started running with beer, so this is an appropriate way to end the show. But he said, what is the highest number of beers you have consumed during a race, and what is your favorite beer?
So three is the most. Okay. And I don't drink all of them, just, you know, probably half of them at a time. And then my favorite beer during the run is a Corona Light. Okay. And then outside of the run, you know, IPAs.
There we go.
Well, Jack is going to bring me some.
And I saw you got one at Canyons. Yeah. I think it was a regular Corona, right?
It was a regular Corona, but I'm not going to be picky at that point, you know?
No, absolutely not. Yeah. I think beer, Camille Herron obviously has kind of coined it in this area for like chugging multiple beers during runs in our area, but just calories and carbonation and yeast, it's kind of good for you. So I'm glad you're not slamming three beers out there, but half of three beers is a great number. So we're going to wrap up the show with our famous rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
Yeah.
What is your favorite post-race meal?
Soup.
Really? What kind?
Vegetable soup.
Okay. Even on a hot day?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Your favorite trail in the area?
Oh, God. Oh. You know what? I'm going to go with No Hands Bridge. That's just my little meditation place.
I love that part, too. And then do you have any bucket list races right now?
Maybe one of these days I get to run another 5K with my Daisy.
Oh.
But Daisy has to get trained.
Well, and that leads us to our last question. I think we kind of know, but cats or dogs?
Oh, both of them, but dog.
Dog. And we love Daisy. She's going to be the poster child, the poster dog for this episode. We're really excited. Because real quick, she got on podium, right?
She got what? Oh, yeah. Yes, she did. She did. Yeah. One of the races. Second place, but then she just wanted to go to the first, you know. I wasn't going to fight it, so.
She knows her place. I've seen that face. She knows she's number one hound.
She does.
Well, thank you all for tuning in. Thank you, Manoj, for spending an hour with us. One more time, we have our Patreon. It's $1 or $2, a reoccurring payment, but there's bonus content on there. So, like, we're going to say goodbye to all of you, but we're going to hang out and talk to Manoj a little bit more. So if you want any after show stuff, head over to our Patreon. For $2, you'll get our post show. And our Venmo, of course, one-time contributions are always appreciated. We thank you guys so much, and we will see you on the trails. Bye, guys.